First, you probably know the bad news already. Mint has shut down. But here's the good news. There's a better alternative. Monarch Money. That's right. Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it. As a finance nerd, you would assume that I have my money game all together. Well, shocker, I didn't. Until Monarch Money. Monarch Money allowed me to easily see what is going on with my finances, help me get a better handle on my spending, budgets, and more. It's my go-to app every day, more so than my bank, because I can quickly see where I am with my budgets and spending, allowing me to invest more and spend time on things I want to do. It's my GPS for money. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, set goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now you get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/beginners. Monarch has a tool that allows you to easily import your data from Mint and keep all your tags and categories. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. Change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications, set up automatic rules for transactions and notifications, and more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving the product. They release updates every 2 weeks and allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. In fact, Monarch Money is one of the first to bring you direct Apple Card, Apple Cash, and savings syncing with the latest iOS 17.4 update. Now you can sync your wallet directly for seamless budgeting. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's a top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/beginners. That's monarchmoney.com/beginners for your extended 30-day free trial. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I'd pay for vacations with whatever was in my wallet, but I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
You're tuned in to the Investing for Beginners podcast. Finally, step-by-step premium investment guidance for beginners. Led by Andrew Sather and Dave Ahern, to decode industry jargon, silence crippling confusion, and help you overcome emotions by looking at the numbers. Your path to financial freedom starts now.
All right, folks, well, welcome to Investing for Beginners podcast. This is episode 66. Today, we're going to talk about several different topics. We're going to talk a little bit about owner's earnings, which is one of Warren Buffett's favorite formulas, if you will, or thoughts and ideas on how he looks at a business. And we're also going to talk a little bit about options. And before we start talking about those, I'd like to tell you about a book I just read recently. It's called F Wall Street. And it was a fantastic book. It was very, very easy to read. And it is not full of jargon, if you will. There's not lots of technical terms in there. He's very good at explaining and breaking down different ideas like owner's earnings, for example. He also talks a little bit about intrinsic value. He also talks about discounted cash flows. But again, it's not super jargony. There's not a lot of math. And even the math that's in there is super, super simple. And, you know, the other thing that's kind of cool about it is he comes from it as an angle. He's a quote unquote insider. He's somebody that works in the business. He buys and sells stocks for people that want to invest. But he comes at it as an angle of, you know, everybody on Wall Street's out to get something from you, and he's not. And it's very, his language is very, it's not rough, but he's very sarcastic is probably the best way of putting it.
Attitude.
And especially attitude. Yeah, thank you. That's the better way of putting it. Yeah, there's a lot of attitude, and he's definitely coming at an advantage of, you know, looking at Wall Street as sort of the enemy. And when I say Wall Street, he's really talking more about the big funds and people that are out there trying to hustle, as opposed to somebody who's there trying to help you invest your money. And it's a great book. I really, really enjoyed it. It's not very long. It's about 250 pages, give or take. And it's very, very fascinating. I would highly recommend it. It's something new that I came across. I know Andrew had read it recently, and he had suggested. I never finished it.
One of the failures that I need to get back on. But I did read a little bit of it, yeah.
And he had recommended it to me based on his partial reading of it. And I really enjoyed
it. Jay June really recommends that book pretty hard, too.
Yeah, he does. And I think you can tell by some of his writing that he gets some of his ideas from that book. So it was pretty cool. So Andrew, why don't you start us off, talk a little bit about owner's earnings, and we'll have a little round table on that, and then we'll talk about options.
Yeah, sounds good. So, you know, what's the purpose of owner's earnings? Warren Buffett was the first one to really kind of popularize this idea. And so I guess to kind of explain owner's earnings, we need to explain what earnings are. And at the risk of getting too technical, we need to explain how earnings is kind of tabulated. Obviously, earnings drives Wall Street, right? So when you see earnings growth, that's what the analysts are all focused on. They're looking at revenue growth, earnings growth, and that tends to make the stock either pop up or dive down. And sometimes it can happen even though it's not logical, right? So a company could do better than their expectations with earnings growth and still have the stock pop up or down. That's kind of a discussion for another day. However, the basic idea of earnings growth makes a business grow. Once you have more earnings, you have more profit, you can reinvest in the business, you can grow the business. And over the long, long term, stock prices tend to grow because earnings grow. Now, it's not as simple as just taking your, you know, for me, like I have my own business, right? For me, because it's a one-man show, revenue and expenses are pretty straightforward. Finding earnings for me is pretty straightforward. But once you get to like the public corporation size with thousands, 10,000s, hundreds of thousands of employees, expenses for this, that, and the other thing, you have the possibility of expenses. You know, you could expense it from one year to the other. All these sorts of things can kind of make earnings a little bit more complicated. And so because it can be complicated, it can also uncover value for you. And so that's where kind of owner's earnings come in. If earnings are being misrepresented, I did not pronounce that right, but as it goes, I mispronounce a lot of things. Basically, you can find pockets of value. You can find stocks that are better at maybe having the potential of having greater earnings in the future by using something like owner's earnings. And it does require having kind of a more advanced knowledge of financial statements. Buffett's in particular isn't too complex. It is one of those things where you don't want to cover each individual aspect in a podcast, but I will talk about some of the general theory behind it. So, like I said, how earnings can get complex with corporations, I believe that's something that's important to understand. And it's a big reason why you can't just rely strictly on PE ratio, because there can be discrepancies, there can be manipulations. We have seen that in the past. So you want to look at multiple factors. So, you know, obviously one way to mitigate against bad earnings representation is owner's earnings. Other methods are some of the things that we teach, like looking at also your sales, your book value, lots of different ways to go about it. But when you think about how earnings is calculated, basically, there are other things that a corporation needs to consider. So they would need to consider like interest and taxes. Those tend to be big ones. So obviously, corporations need to pay taxes. You saw kind of an earnings boost with the latest tax cuts for corporations that kind of flowed through and led to more stock buybacks in the market. You also have interest payments. So a company with more debt They might purchase bonds or other debt instruments. They will have to take that out of the earnings before, before really posting, because that's true profit, right? I mean, you have earnings that you get from the business, and then you also have these other expenses that come along with running a business. So that's another thing. Another big one is like depreciation and amortization. I believe we've covered the basics of that before, just kind of as a recap. Say you are buying, you have to buy a huge factory to create widgets or whatever. If you don't have depreciation, then it's going to make whatever year you buy the factory look like earnings are really bad, when essentially you did fine as a business. So for example, let's say you make $3 million a year and the factory costs you $6 million, right? So it looks like the first year you bought the factory that you had negative earnings, or you didn't pull a profit, when in reality, you did pull a profit. You just have this, if anything, with the new factory, you have higher earnings potential in the future. And what happened in the core business, as far as however much it costs you to pay employees versus what you brought in, might still be the same or even better than the year before. So then businesses use depreciation to kind of, they'll take that expense and they'll average it out over, let's say, 10 years. And so earnings more accurately reflects what's going on with the health of a business and what they really earned, excuse me. And so that's really the whole purpose of earnings, is to give you the health of the business, give you an idea of how the business is doing, how it's turning a profit. And owner's earnings tries to give you a more accurate representation of that. So because earnings does take depreciation into account, it can also have some flaws, because if a company is, let's say, over aggressive on buying factories, right? If they're trying too hard, too fast to expand, then that can be a problem for investors, because that can actually, instead of help cash flow in the future, it can hurt cash flow. And so, like, I know Buffett takes capital expenditures into account when he calculates owner's earnings. And so he penalizes companies for having too much CapEx. And it's for that same logical reason, is if a company's spending too much to reinvest in the business, buying too many factories, that's CapEx, then their real earning power actually isn't as high as it might appear in the regular earnings statement. And so hopefully that's not too complex. Hopefully it kind of gives you an idea of how owner's earnings is kind of calculated, kind of why it is, right? And if it's something you want to pursue, I know a lot of value investors, if they don't follow Buffett's owner's earnings calculation, they might kind of have their own, or you might have heard of things called like EBITDA. And that's funny. It's kind of a thing that's becoming a trend in the investment banking world, in the more typical kind of Wall Street route that maybe Joe Ponzio is kind of trying to push against in his F Wall Street book. But, you know, like the guys that work at like Deutsche Bank or Goldman Sachs, there's a couple Instagram accounts I follow that are really, really funny, and they make a lot of jokes about EBITDA. And what that is, it's another form of our earnings calculation. And so what they're doing is they're trying to look at what the core business is doing, and they're ignoring things like depreciation, amortization, interest and taxes. And so again, there's going to be plus and minuses to calculating earnings and calculating the variations of earnings. And it's going to be different per situation. So it can get really, really muddy and messy. Which is why I tend to prefer to look at bigger scale things. I just want to see like total sales. I want to see total earnings and make sure there's just enough in there. But if you really, really want to get down to the nitty gritty and really, really attempt to understand and try to find undervaluation through kind of like a mastery of accounting, then it's definitely something you can try to pursue, and owner's earnings could be a fantastic way to do it. And I know Ponzio covered it in F Wall Street as well. And another book recommendation, if you're really interested in owner's earnings, and particularly the way Buffett calculated it, is called The Warren Buffett Way. And they show some of his previous successes, some of his best stock picks, and they show kind of how he calculated owner's earnings then and how he created valuations off of those. And so that can be, again, just another useful tool, another great piece of information, and maybe a jumping board to get you into learning more about financial statements. So that's kind of all I have to say about it.
Well, that was quite a lot. That was good. A lot of great stuff that you unloaded on us there.
Let's face it, a vibrant sex life contributes significantly to your overall happiness and confidence. But sometimes your hectic schedule doesn't leave room for doctor visits. That's where Hims steps in. With their convenient and discreet online platform, you can receive treatment for erectile dysfunction from the comfort and privacy of your own home. No more waiting rooms. No more awkward conversations, just a simple, direct path to treatment that works around your life, not interrupts it. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and 100% online. No uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a series of questions on their site, and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you for free. No insurance is needed. If ED is getting you down, it's time you join hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/investing. That's Hims.com/investing for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/investing. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription needed. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
The thing that I really like about the owner's earnings, Buffett created it back in 1986. He shared his exact thoughts in one of his shareholder letters, and it was fantastic. I'm not going to read it to you on the air because there's a lot of gobbledygook in there that would really confuse people. But if you're really interested in it, there is a, I wrote a blog post about owner's earnings a while back, and I can put a link to it in the show notes, and it has Buffett's quote in there about his thoughts on owner's earnings, so you can kind of get an idea of what he was thinking about it. And I like all the things Andrew was talking about it. It's definitely a deep dive into the company for sure. If you're interested in learning more about the accounting aspects of digging into financial statements and really learning the ins and outs of how a company thinks about different things, it's a great way to look at it. One of the things that I like about owner's earnings is it gives you an idea of kind of what the company is doing with their money. And kind of the reason why I say that is because the whole point of a company growing is to create assets, which is going to create cash flow. And it gives you an idea of using this formula. It gives you a really good idea of what the company is doing with their money. So whether they're going to use it to pay more assets or whether they're going to use it to pay out a dividend, you can just use this formula. It helps you see where that money should be going or could be going. And it gives you an idea behind what management really thinks of the business and how they want to use it. And that's really kind of what it breaks down to. There's a lot of a deep dive accounting terms like, you know, CapEx and maintenance CapEx and averaging those out. And there's a lot of different things that you need to go into to really get into the nitty gritty of it. And again, you know, that's really more for somebody like me who's kind of a geek and I really like to dig into this kind of stuff. The F Wall Street version of owner's earnings is far more simple than what Andrew and I are talking about. And it's a lot less involved. I like it as just kind of an overview tool to kind of give you a quick, you know, back of the envelope kind of idea of how the company is doing. And I think it's a good way to kind of help you screen for companies a little bit. And that's kind of what the angle he comes at it from the book. The owner's earnings that I'm talking about and the one Andrew is talking about is a far more deep dive into the company and getting a little more in depth into what's really going on with the company. But basically, again, it kind of all boils down to, you know, what the company is doing with their assets, what they're doing with their liabilities, and how they treat those things. And the thing that I like about it too is it does take into account things like depreciation, amortization, and those are very, can be very critical things to think about when you're thinking about the earnings of the company. Because the one thing I don't like about just looking at the net earnings of a company is that there can be some manipulation in there. And I am certainly not an expert in determining all that, but I'm trying to learn more about it. And it can be a little bit misleading. And I just feel like sometimes there's just a little too much wiggle room in there for me to not know. And I'm one of those people that just has to know. So yes, I'm a nerd. I get it. I'm okay with that. I've accepted it. I'm 51 years old. It's not going to change. So I'm just going with it. But the point of what I'm saying is that this is a great formula to use if you really want to dive deep into the company and you really want to find out what they're doing with their money and where it's going. I think that's kind of the basic point of the whole formula.
So in a nutshell, it can be a good way to also evaluate management because they're making, like you said, decisions on what to do with their capital. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know. It can get really intense from there, but
yes,
there's going to be situations. It's not black and white, but there's going to be times where it's better to give money back to shareholders rather than grow the business, depending on what kind of efficiency or what their growth picture kind of looks like. So you can kind of use that as another way to evaluate management without having to speak to them. And so I guess it could be useful in that way too.
Yep. Yep. Totally. Yep. Very much so. All right. So moving on, let's talk a little bit about options. So Andrew, why don't you give me your thoughts on options?
Hey, you, what's the best way to get started in the market? Download Andrew's free ebook at stockmarketpdf.com.
Options. Stay away. If you think about, and there's some good things about options, and we should cover that too. But if you think about really what you're trying to do with an investment is something where you put money at risk. You're supposed to be paid an income for that risk. And the idea is once you receive income from the investment, then you buy more investments with that income, and then it can grow exponentially. We talk about that all the time, compounding interest, dividend reinvestment, yada, yada, yada. So with options, you have, you know, there's so many different types of options, and it can be really easy to get tangled up into it and trying to really follow it if you're a beginner. But if you really understand that when you're buying stocks, the reasoning behind it is to, because I'm not like some crazy expert, right? Like I don't try to go into the stock market or the investing world thinking that I have some edge that makes me better than everybody else. Like I could figure it out better than everybody else. I don't argue that the average investor can be that way either. What we're really doing and what our true advantage is that we understand something that's so basic and so fundamental that's so lost once you, again, kind of get tangled up into the world of investing, that simply by being a part owner of a business, simply by buying stocks that are kind of beaten down by the market, yet still have good business fundamentals, still have strong balance sheets, and simply by holding it for the long term and letting the interest work for you rather than trying to work for the interest, work for the gains, work to try to do all these sorts of complex and second, third, fourth level thinking and strategy and skills. Instead of trying to do all that, just simply put your money to work, let the businesses do the work, let them grow earnings, let that get funneled back to you, reinvest the money, and then do that consistently and hold for the long term and understand how the stock market works. Understand that there are going to be bear markets. It's inevitable. There are going to be recessions. It's inevitable. And that most of your gains will be made on the recovery because you stood your ground, because you did not cater to the common emotion that's felt in the market when people think stocks are just the worst thing ever. But so I guess saying all that, right, there are options that you can buy that provide you with income. There are options that you can buy that can hedge you, right? Like the idea of a hedge is to give you kind of like a backup plan, because with anything that has to do with trading, investing, obviously there's so much uncertainty. Nobody can predict the future. And so you can have things like hedges to give you protection against something that you don't expect to happen. You buy stocks expecting them to go up, but that's not always the case. And so that's where your hedge kind of comes in to rescue you. That's all fine and good. And there's other strategies. I know like you can buy, and again, I'm not an expert and I haven't gotten super deep into the reads with this, but I know you can buy, like, I think it's you buy or you sell. Do you buy puts or do you sell, or you sell puts? I think you sell calls and you buy puts, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, so you can like buy a naked put on a stock, for example. And so, again, don't quote me if I'm wrong, but the essential idea is doing that will still give you an income, and then it lets you buy. So basically, if the stock goes down, so you do this on the stock you already want to buy, right? You've calculated its intrinsic value to be, let's say, $25. You buy, there's some aspect of the naked put that puts you in if the stock trades to 15. And so, you know, if the stock's at 20 and you have this put that you can exercise at 15, then, you know, if the stock continues to fall, then you win, right? You're happy because then you got to buy the same stock that was at 20. Now you get to buy it at 15, and you're essentially buying at a greater discount than if you just bought at 20. It also provides you upside because you collect income along the way because you hold it. And so it's like, well, if the stock continues to rise, then that's fine because I'm collecting income as if I were still holding it and having it that to pay me a dividend, right? So you have this, a lot of these type of options trades that either work as hedges or they seem to work as a win-win situation. So whether the stock goes up, down, or sideways, it seems like you will be happy with the result. But something to understand, I think, about Wall Street is that there's no such thing as a free lunch. There's no such thing as completely eliminating risk. If we go back to the definition of investments, you're putting money at risk. There's no way to, you can try to do different things to kind of mitigate the risk, but it's always going to bring another risk along with it. And so a risk with the naked put option, for example, for value investing would be an opportunity cost risk. You know, sure, you win on the upside or you win on the downside, but what about if you were right on the stock and you bought it at 20, it goes up to 30, sure, you might still get the upside of the put, but you won't have as much upside as if you would have just bought. And so you know, even though you receive income, you would not get that same stock price appreciation. So you're always going to be trading off something. And so in order to give yourself kind of like a win, quote unquote, on a trade that goes against you, you have to give up upside to do that. And so I say, you know, why even try to kind of outthink it, right? If we've already talked about, we've already determined, one of our first episodes, we talked about trying to time the market and how it doesn't really matter if you can time the market correctly, as long as you're in there long enough, that will actually beat trying to time the market. And so that's why I kind of urge investors to stay away from options, especially if you're average, especially if you're a beginner, is because even though it can really give you kind of those win-win situations, it's not a true win-win, and you can really cap your upside by doing that. And, you know, it can keep you out of a stock that you would have liked to be in, and then you still get the same kind of fear of missing out. So why not instead really be okay with the idea that, you know, I'm not trying to figure out which stocks are going to go down, which ones are going to go up. I'm not trying to mix a portfolio of like longs and shorts. I'm not trying to capture like a big movement with an option thing where you can really hit a jackpot if a stock moves a certain way. I'm not trying to do any of that. That's all trying to predict things. All I'm trying to do is understand that most investors don't really understand what a good business looks like. All you have to do is look at some of the most expensive stocks right now, look at their balance sheets and their income statements, and realize that these investors are nuts. So we can do that. We can use that same knowledge to generally figure out what a stock's really worth and buy the ones that are trading much lower than it, avoiding the ones like Tesla that are trading much higher than what they're really worth. And again, we can really hold for the long term, which is a huge advantage compared to a lot of the mutual funds who are in and out of trades by the year, and they're not really true buy and hold. And we've talked about the implications of the whole financial industry. One of our first 5 or 6 episodes was also about that, maybe episode 7. I don't know. So just keeping those things in mind, I think it really makes sense to avoid options. It really makes sense to just kind of stick to what's simple, stick to what works, and instead of wasting brain power on trying to figure out what options are, even though it's something, yeah, maybe get a general understanding, but really, is it a rabbit hole you'd want to go down? I think if you want to go down a rabbit hole, I'd much rather say you go down the owner's earnings rabbit hole than like a rabbit hole about options or puts or shorting or hedging or any of those sorts of things. And I think one last reason why options are bad, not last reason, maybe one of many reasons, is that you really have to leverage, you have to invest with margin. So you have to essentially borrow money from a broker, and with that comes all sorts of complications. We're probably one of the most anti-debt people out there. I know that's kind of few and far between. Maybe I won't speak for Dave, but at least for myself, I'm like super anti-debt when it comes to stocks and personal finances.
I'm right there with you.
Okay. So maybe we're conservative to a fault, but just investing with debt leads to all sorts of problems. It can make you exit a trade. You'll be forced to exit a trade when you don't want to, when you invest on margin. And that's just one of the many things that can go wrong. And so, again, you have to buy options with margin. And so I don't want to buy with any debt at all anyways, even though maybe the risk of losing a lot of money is really small. Still not something I want to pursue, and it's not something I really want to recommend for most people.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one of the things that I like about what you were saying was the margin and using the risk. And it really, you know, options really comes down to what your risk tolerance is and whether you're comfortable using all those tools as a way to invest. And I'm not. And that's just not something I really want to go down that rabbit hole at all. And so frankly, I really have not learned more than just a cursory amount of it. I started reading a little bit about it when I first got into investing, and it just sounded scary, risky, a great way for me to lose any sort of money that I had. And I just did not find it appealing in any way, shape, or form. And again, this doesn't mean that it is bad or that it's all bad. If your risk tolerance can handle the ups and downs of this, or the fluidity of everything that goes on, and using leverage and debt to help finance your financial dreams, then by all means, learn as much about it as you can and, you know, hope for the best. But I think the way that Andrew and I look at investing and our ideas of how to grow your wealth are far more conservative, but they're also a lot less risk-free. Like, I can go to bed at night and not stew and fret about what's going to happen in the stock market tomorrow, because I don't have to worry about that. I'm not leveraged to the gills. I don't have a huge trade that may get forced, like Andrew said, it may get forced to sell tomorrow, and I could lose my shirt on it just because of the way I've set up my options. So again, if it's something that you're comfortable with doing, go for it. If you're not, like Andrew and I, it's why even go down that rabbit hole? I think, you know, an owner's earnings rabbit hole would be far more beneficial to you in the long run than running an options, you know, game. That's just, I get my thought on that.
I mean, to be sure, you can make a lot of money with options. There's plenty of stories online about it. And it could be fun for some fun money too, because of the leverage, it tends to magnify your results. So you could turn like $1,000 into $100,000. But at the same time, you know, for all the reasons we already mentioned, I don't think it's a good route to take. And it's, I see it more as gambling than investing for most people.
Yeah, I would agree. Unless you really got the time to really educate yourself and really learn how it works in and out. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, and you almost have to play it as if you're better at playing the game itself rather than like actually analyzing companies, because you right. can be right on the trade, or you could be right on your investment thesis and still lose money on the trade. So you kind of have to more so have a little bit of a crystal ball, and, or just have a superior strategy that really focuses on the options part of it rather than the stock market part of it.
Exactly. Yeah, I would agree. All right, folks. Well, that is going to wrap up our discussion today on owner's earnings and options. I hope you found some value in it and you learned a thing or two. So without any further ado, we're going to go ahead and sign off. You guys have a great week. Go out there and invest with a margin of safety, emphasis on the safety, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
We hope you enjoyed this content. 7 Steps to Understanding the Stock Market shows you precisely how to break down the numbers in an engaging and readable way with real-life examples. Get access today at stockmarketpdf.com. Until next time, have a prosperous day.
The information contained is for general information and educational purposes only. It is not intended for a substitute for legal, commercial, and/or financial advice from a licensed professional. Review our full disclaimer at einvestingforbeginners.com.